Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
As usual, I want to start with an email.
As usual.
Well, yeah.
One day you won't, and we will know the world is coming to an end. It's been plenty of times we haven't.
The world is already coming to an end. This one's for you, Luke.
Oh, no. Is it critical?
It's not. It's really nice. So it's from episode 10.
Okay.
The Time Traveling Twins.
The one that I did, yeah.
The one that you did.
Yeah.
If reality is essentially what you make it, do you choose what happens after death as well? Like, if someone is Catholic, they go to heaven or hell.
Yeah.
If someone believes in reincarnation, they get reincarnated, etc. What if someone is agnostic? Sincerely, Mason, a confused science nerd.
That is a theory, a very solid theory, that essentially if you are... One theory is that you essentially are a quantum observer. You are choosing what to turn from quantum possible states into reality. And it's possible that when you die, what you believe will happen is actually what happens. And that will be to do with, could be to do with what you believe you deserve to go through, or what you believe you fear, or what you believe is good and lovely. That's very possible. Mm. Also, no one knows. But I like that you read that into it. That's great.
I want to point out that that's what happens in Narnia.
Is it?
It is. So
I don't think that's what the Narnia books were about.
God, yeah. They were.
No, but they weren't.
No, they were. They weren't. Right. No, but at the end of the Narnia books, all of the kids die in a train crash and go to Narnia. And then they have this bigger Narnia that's fantastic. And then there's this bad donkey that thinks he's just in a shed. So he's in a shed.
Right.
And also there's these Arab people that get killed by their
happy
crazy
children's books.
Hot god.
It reminds me of one of my favorite lines from Harry Potter, which is Harry asks Dumbledore when he's in... essentially limbo. He asks Dumbledore, "Sir, is this real or is it happening inside my head?"
Dumbledore
says, "Of course it's happening inside your head, Harry, but why on earth should that mean that it's not real?" I love that so
much.
What
a good one. I love that.
Yeah, love
it. That's a good way to start this. Shall we get started?
Let's start the show.
Hello and welcome to SciGuys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined once again... That's not right.
Leave it in!
I'm Corey, and I'm joined once again by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutler.
Good day.
Oh, we're all back in the same room.
Yeah, that's why I had to change it, because I'm not always joined by you guys anymore.
It's been so many holidays, I'm sorry.
It's so nice to have you back, Luke.
Thank you, Corey.
Did you have a good time while you were away?
I had a lovely time, and I learned to love science a little bit again.
Shall we get into it?
Please.
Yes. So this week, we're going to be talking about boys just being boys.
Oh, no.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, no.
In August of 1971, Stanford psychology professor Philip Zimbardo embarked on an ambitious and very poorly controlled social psychology experiment.
I know this.
In an effort
Stanford
to find
prison
out,
experiment.
It's the Stanford prison experiment. In an effort to find out how being a guard or a prisoner affects the human mind, Zimbardo subjected a number of college kids to his mock jail. This is the Stanford prison experiment.
I love this.
Can I just point out...
It's awful, but I love it.
That this is the first week, James, where you've known what the subject is, and I haven't.
No, I got the black hole episode as well.
Oh, okay, I wasn't there. So.
And that's because the other person was Dan. Oh.
We love Dan, friend of the pod, but terrible.
Terrible.
So,
terrible what? Just
Janet
terrible? Generally terrible?
Oh, very good. He was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he was. I listened to that episode. Very good fun.
Yeah. So you guys have heard of the Stanford Prison Experiment?
I've seen the film.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
I did not watch it.
I've seen the film. I completely forgot about that film.
I haven't seen the film.
Okay, it's quite a good film.
I watched it on a plane. That's why I forgot it.
Ah. Yeah. I want to watch it because I've read this. So I basically read this mostly from the transcript that the actual guide wrote.
Wow, that's some dedication to the podcast, Corey. If you just read through a transcript.
Oh, and it was like a transcript for some lecture he did on it. It's only like, what, 15 pages? It's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay.
Yeah, it was really good. So what do you know about it? What's the background that you can give?
So he separated the students into two groups.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were going to pretend to be police officers and some of them were going to pretend to be prisoners. And they had actual cells that actually locked. And they had outfits. And essentially, what he found was that the students started playing their characters to the point where the police officers resorted to essentially police brutality.
Yeah.
And it broke down into this horrible, horrible thing. And he just sort of let it happen.
It was meant to run for 2 weeks, wasn't it? And then it got shut down after
6 days.
Because someone less than a week died.
No.
And it was actually... No one died.
Oh.
Some people got beaten, but it was actually his wife that was like, "You need to shut this down, or I'm gonna divorce you."
His girlfriend, who was postgrad,
sorry, yeah,
at the university, was like, "Oh, what are you studying here? No, you shouldn't be doing this anymore. This is horrific." She went to the prison. She was like, "No, you need to stop this." After 6 days.
All right, tell us the story, Corey.
Okay, so for everyone that doesn't know, it's an experiment involving college-age boys. They all replied to an advert in a newspaper from Palo Alto, California. They got assessed physically, so they were all like roughly the same size. They were all healthy. None of them were psychologically, you know, damaged anyway.
Before.
Yeah. None of them were ill. None of them were mentally ill. No history of crime or drugs or anything. These were all just normal middle class boys.
That's so concerning because like it would almost be a little bit relieving if it turns out that some of them were a little bit psychologically not okay, but it turns out that this is just in human nature to assume the role you're given and to become psychopathic.
Well, we'll get there because that might not be true.
Okay.
Yeah,
phew.
I know.
Yeah.
That's one of the good things. If you start looking into this, the more recent stuff is a lot more hopeful.
Okay, brilliant.
So they ended up with 24 boys from all over the US and Canada that just happened to be in that city for the summer. And they offered to pay them £15 a day, which is around about £60 now. So they were all doing this for some money, which is the reason why they got into it.
And that is not a lot.
No. Well, I mean, it's like it's 15 quid, $15. It's about $60 today. Yeah. So it's like, $60 for 2 weeks.
Kind of better, yeah, I guess so.
That's not bad. And they feed you and stuff, so yeah, that's good.
They also beat you.
Well, they didn't know that. So they split them up by a flip of a coin, and then on Sunday morning in August, the boys that were prisoners were arrested by the actual police.
Wow.
At their actual, like, so the homes they were living in, the police came, drove up, lights and stuff, arrested them.
The full experience.
Yeah, held them up against the police car, properly took them to the station, booked them, fingerprints.
Yeah.
Searched them, and then blindfolded them and put them in a cell.
And then it turned out those policemen were another experiment.
But
wow!
It wasn't an actual prison, though, was it? It was a university.
It's like a corridor in a university.
It was on uni campus.
So they went to the psychology department of Stanford, and they went to the basement, and they just completely remodeled it.
They remodeled it to look like a prison.
They not just like function like a prison. So they boarded up walls of the corridor, and that became like the prison yard, which was the only place the boys were allowed to walk around outside of their cells.
Yeah. They put in a. They put in a solitary confinement room as well.
So, yeah, that was a janitor's closet.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. So, they also had three cells, which were big enough for three people.
Mm.
They took the doors off. So, those were research rooms. They took the doors off them and replaced them with these custom doors that had...
bars, yeah.
Yeah, well, bars and numbers on them. So, it was like actually going into a prison.
That was the other thing, wasn't it? Because the whole thing with numbers is that they all had an individual number and they could only be referred to, the prisoners at least, could only be referred to by their number, their prisoner number.
It dehumanizes you.
Yeah, exactly. So they also bugged the cells using an intercom, which was a two-way system. So they could make announcements, but they could also hear what was going on within the cells. And they cut this little hole in the end of the corridor so that they could put a video camera
.
And watch them. And I've seen some of the pictures and videos, and it's kind of horrific.
Yeah.
It looks like... I mean, okay, they make this comparison in themselves. Some of it looks like stuff from, like, Nazi Germany.
Mm.
Genuinely. Really? If you were to, like, put the pictures up against one another, obviously they look much healthier, but the way that they're being treated and shoved around, it looks so similar.
Yeah, seriously, if you guys are interested in this, you should watch the film because I'm second guessing what Corey's saying, and that's purely based on the film. The film is allegedly a very good reenactment of mm-hmm. what actually happened, and it has all these details that Corey's explaining.
Yeah, and if you so you could watch the film, and if you want to go even deeper into it, you can go onto the Stanford website. Stanford University website has actual videos and recordings.
Really?
Yeah, because it's an experiment, and it's all publicly available stuff. So videos, recordings, pictures, all on the website.
I don't think I've seen the actual videos or pictures before, so...
I wouldn't.
I mean, morbid curiosity.
Yeah. So they had the hole, the solitary confinement, which we've mentioned, and there were no windows or clocks in the building that the prisoners were in, so they had no idea what time of day it was at all.
So they didn't even know that 6 days had gone.
They had no way of knowing other than the meals that they were given. So they had 9 prisoners, and the rest were on reserve, and then the guards also worked in shifts. And as far as I could tell, they had 3 guards on a shift, and then they rotated out. So of the 24, you had 12 of each, and then 9 of those 12 were prisoners.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. So the prisoners were brought into this prison one at a time.
Uh-huh.
And they got to meet the warden. And then they got stripped naked and deloused. And then they were given a uniform, which was pretty awful.
Full prison experience.
Yeah.
Was the warden another one of the students?
Okay, so the warden was one of the researchers.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is where kind of an issue starts to arise. We'll talk about it a bit more later.
That's like the scientist being... in the petri dish.
Yeah, exactly. Researchers kind of took roles of like the prison warden or the superintendent. So it was a bit
sure.
So they got into their roles as well, which is why it.
Oh, this is so messed.
Which is kind of why they let it happen.
So you think? I'm guessing these further experiments that you are alluding to that sort of give us a little bit of positivity towards the human condition. Partly why they got this bad was because of interference by the researchers.
Yeah, so there are not any further experiments I'm going to talk about. It's just details that came to light about this experiment.
Right.
Yeah. So as I said, they were stripped naked and then given their uniform. So their uniform was pretty awful. They put them in a dress because they were all boys. So they thought if we put them in dresses, then they'll be humiliated. They didn't give them underwear to wear. They gave them some rubber sandals, and then they had to wear this stocking cap, which is essentially like a pair of tights, just cut up and put on your head, like a bald cap.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, so that was to cover their hair so that they could... Yeah. So in normal prisons, what happens is they'll shave your head.
Yes.
But they didn't want to do that, obviously, so they just did the next best thing.
I like how they locked up 24 college-age students in a basement of a university... And they were like, but I'm going to draw the line and shaving their head. No.
They would have had to ask you beforehand.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't have been quite, you'd be able to mentally prepare yourself. Mm. Whereas in this case, they were just like, no, you have to wear this stocking cap.
Okay.
Yeah. What I love as well is that when I was reading this, they like the whole thing about shaving their head to make them dehumanize slightly, is that the paper kind of discussed, it was like, some people use their hair to express themselves.
I use my hair to express myself.
Exactly, yeah. And they were like, okay, we'll take that way.
Is that don't it? That was that's what you wanted to say?
That's right, yeah.
You wanted to make a don't hug me, I'm scared reference.
Sure.
That's not a Simpsons reference.
So the idea was that they wanted to kind of speed up the process of embarrassing them and humiliating them.
Right.
So the idea of a normal prison uniform is to take away your individuality.
Yeah.
You feel humiliated.
Mm.
And you know, that happens over a period of time where you're wearing the same thing over and over. They didn't have really time to do that because it was only 2 weeks. So they thought, well, just put them in the dress and they'll feel uncomfortable.
That's weird. I don't think that was part of the film. I don't think.
Really?
I think it was.
Really?
I think it was.
That they were all in dresses?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, okay, I don't remember it that well then.
I think it's weird.
I think they only mention it once when they first arrive and then they don't really talk about it again.
I think it's odd that you guys are thinking of the film, knowing that this happened to an actual group of adults.
The film came first, Corey, and then they did the experiment.
Just to see what happened. Yeah.
Can't believe they made the Stanford Prison experiment a real thing.
That's like what happened with the Titanic.
Exactly, you know? The film came first. Damn it, James Cameron, you killed all those people.
I just can't wait till Avatar comes
through.
Send
him to the Stanford Prison experiment. James Cameron, get in the jail.
Get in the bin.
They also, I don't know if this is in the film, but they attached a heavy chain to their ankles.
You know what? My memory of the film is clearly flawed, so I don't know.
Good. So they attach a heavy chain to their ankles. This doesn't happen in normal prisons, obviously.
No.
It was just because they wanted to make them feel that they were imprisoned all the time.
Well, then they actually were stuck.
Well, no, it wasn't attached to anything.
Oh.
It was just there.
No, I know, but it's quite heavy.
It's just a heavy weight behind you.
Yeah, so it's heavy, like, as in you, so you notice it, sort of thing. Yeah. Not in a case of, like, oh, it's so heavy, I can't move my leg. Just if they roll over in their sleep.
So you feel trapped.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they roll over in their sleep, it wakes them up, and they remember that they're in prison.
Although you say they're asleep, but they didn't have the lights off. The lights were on all the time.
I think the lights went out. There was lights out at 10 p.m.
Okay, I'm wrong. Continue.
Yeah. So conversely, the guards were pretty well off. They got to wear khakis and reflective sunglasses so that you couldn't see their eyes and read their emotions, which coincidentally, the police officer that was arresting them, Luke just put down his sunglasses for everyone listening at home.
I shall now spend the rest of the
podcast... Oh no, I can't read his emotions.
...simulating the Stanford prison experiment. You will not read any of my emotions.
What is he feeling? They are Ray-Bans. They're not the most intimidating sunglasses.
Fine!
Khaki sunglasses, and they also had a billy club, which is a beating stick that American policemen have.
Is it the same as like a truncheon in
kind
the UK?
Kind of. Yeah, but a billy club is, as far as I'm aware... is like a small, softer,
like a rounder's bat.
Yeah, well,
like a croissant.
Like a croissant. No, just a flaccid one. Just
a flaccid croissant.
A flaccid baton.
Like a beating stick. Think of a beating stick.
What do you mean a beating stick?
I can tell you.
That's not a normal thing that I know what it is.
A bat in a club, you know?
What?
A club. A bat.
A club is hard. It's rigid.
Yeah.
But a soft one.
So a truncheon.
Well, it's not as hard as wood, is it?
A flaccid truncheon.
Like a truncheon's not made of wood. The British police don't go around with wooden truncheons.
Like a baseball
can I just interrupt and say that we've like spent 2 whole minutes?
All right, they had a thing to smack
about
people.
This baton
carry on. Carry on.
Carry on.
So they also had a whistle around their neck for whistling.
Is that what it was
like when
for?
You're in a plane crash? A whistle to attract attention.
I think a plane crash is loud enough.
Imagine it.
Wait a minute.
Okay, not to laugh at plane crashes, but imagine if you're in a plane crash and it's like, and then you get out and go, hello? Did anyone hear me?
In the middle
what
of the ocean.
What whistle sounds like that?
Okay. We spent 2 minutes on smacking sticks.
And now
we're spending
5 minutes on whistles.
Seconds on whistles.
So the reason they did this was to make all of the guards feel more imposing and hide their emotions.
Mm-hmm.
They also didn't give the guards any training. They just kind of said, okay, go off, do your thing.
You do you.
Be a guard now. So for the prison, like I said, there were 3 cells, so 3 prisoners to a cell. The beds were quite small. They couldn't fit that many in the room. And that's where they spent most of their time. So at 2:30 a.m. on the first night, the guards did a count, which is very easy. It's where you count.
To 9.
All of the prisoners. No.
To 12.
So essentially, they lined them up and had them shout out their numbers. It wasn't like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It was like number 816.
Okay, yeah.
Or 8270.
Sure.
Yeah, so they had them shout out their numbers just to kind of keep them in line, make them feel like they weren't people, and also so the guards had a chance to interact with them.
Yes, and in the film, if I'm remembering correctly, which let's be honest, I'm probably not, there was like some people weren't enthusiastic enough about saying their number, and they were made to do it again and again and again. They're like, what did you say? And they was like, 816!
Yeah, I mean, that's generally what happens with counts.
Yeah.
I mean, you do it in, it's kind of like very army-like as well, a lot of it.
Mm.
So they also used push-ups as a punishment.
That was also in the film.
Yeah, to begin with. That was... So one of the good guards... So at the end, they kind of split the guards up into 3 different groups. Mm. They didn't actually literally split them up. They just kind of spoke about them in 3 separate groups. The good guards, the tough but fair guards, and the bad guards.
The shit beds,
oh, basically. They were... No, I mean, they were good at their job, but they were evil.
Tough.
But apparently one of the good guards is the one that came up with the push-ups thing, which then... spiraled out
got
of control.
Abused, yeah.
Well, I think push-ups is used in the army as a punishment.
It was also used in Nazi Germany, Luke.
Well, that was the army.
No, genuinely in concentration camps.
Sure.
Oh, lovely.
But I mean, yes.
Yeah. No, okay. I mean, I'm just saying
that's not the army though.
It's a really bad punishment when you're kind of malnourished and sleep deprived.
Yeah.
More so than for someone that's fit and healthy.
Yes.
So the first day was pretty uneventful, and then the second day it all kicked off. There was a full-on riot, a proper rebellion.
The second day, day two.
So the prisoners essentially barricaded themselves in the cells and were hurling abuse at the guards. They pushed the beds up to the doors so that no one could come in. And the guards were pretty riled up about this. They didn't really know what to do. So the morning shift ended up kind of coming in while the night shift were still there. And the night shift hung around with the morning shift, and then they wanted reinforcements. So there ended up being 9 guards to 9 prisoners. They ended up using a fire extinguisher to get all the prisoners away from the door so they could break in.
Oh, right.
So,
how does that work?
It's CO2. They just sprayed it in through
them.
The thing.
But where did they spray it in through if the door was shut?
So the door had like bars.
Oh, the bars.
The yeah.
Yes, of course. Okay.
So you could see in and stuff. So they sprayed the door through the bars, which, and CO2, for anyone listening, is freezing.
Mm.
So cold. So that
That's
pushed
why
all the prisoners.
Trees are always shivering.
Yeah. That's
Can they breathe?
They? Because they make CO2.
No, they're not.
Trees make CO2, everyone.
I mean, it's possible.
So by this point, the prisoners had removed their caps and ripped off their numbers. So by the time the guards came bursting in, the guards just stripped them naked and, you know, put the ringleaders in solitary. Which,
That's fun.
Day two. And these people around about our age are just
4 days to go.
Treating each other terribly.
Yeah.
So they realized that physical punishment, like push-ups, wasn't really working properly. So they decided to start to psychologically torture them.
How?
Great.
Oh, this is good.
Do they stop feeding them?
Oh, is it good?
Well, okay. So stop feeding them is one part of it. They put the least involved prisoners into a good cell. They made one cell a good cell, which was nice. It had beds and stuff.
Nice.
Because they'd taken the beds out of the other cells.
Oh, bad.
Yeah. They also gave them some special food while the other prisoners weren't allowed to eat.
What special food?
I don't know. Just food.
Just special food. Okay, move on.
Yeah.
you know, standard, bog standard special food.
I mean, as far as I can tell, they were eating sandwiches and stuff, so it was probably just nicer sandwiches. Yeah. They put the...
Not spat on.
Yeah. So they put them in the nice cell and they let them brush their teeth and wash.
Wow, privilege.
While the other ones weren't allowed to.
Check your privilege, prisoners.
Nice, yeah, but then prisoner privilege.
After half a day, they took the bad inmates and swapped them with the good inmates. So now the good inmates were in the bad cell, the bad ones were in the good cell.
Right, so this is where this is important, because that kind of behavior is where it deviates from them role-playing to them just being, like, messing with them.
Yeah.
And where did that come from? Did that come from the guys playing prisoners, guys playing police officers, or did it come from the experimenters?
Well, it came from the guys being the guards. They kind of came up with those ideas, but the thing is that this wasn't just them messing with them, they were trying to divide them.
Yes.
So after that point, none of the prisoners could trust each other. They thought that the prisoners that were in the good cells were ratting them out.
Sure, but what I mean is that they weren't told to do that. And so they weren't told, like, mess with them, divide them, that kind of thing. They were just told, as far as I'm aware, role play guards and prisoners, right? And so if you are doing that, and that's something that you naturally, when doing a role play, decide to do, that to me, if these are just randomly selected, like a random selection of a fairly good like representation of the male population of America and Canada, that speaks volumes about the minds of the American and Canadian male population.
So I'd argue that it's not exactly like they were role-playing and just decided to do it. At that point, after the riot, they felt physically threatened by the prisoners. So they'd basically forgotten what reality was at that point. They genuinely thought they were...
Same.
Well, but yeah, that's why they were doing that, moving them around and splitting them up. And it kind of brought the guards closer together. So the guards were one unit, but each of the prisoners was kind of fending for themselves. They didn't trust anyone. So the experimenters brought in a consultant, an ex-convict, to kind of give them some pointers on what was going on. And the ex-con said that, yeah, this is something that happens in prisons, where the guards will divide up the prisoners and make them kind of infight. They apparently use homosexuality as a massive thing for that. But also split them up by race. So, like, you've got the black people fighting Caucasians and the Latino people all hating each other. Fantastic. So it's pretty messed up that this happened, like, after 2 days.
So it's actually a thing that happens in prison.
Mm. But was the consultant advising on how to make the experiment more messed up? Or was it just saying, oh, yeah, is he commentating?
He was kind of, yeah. So he was just speaking to the researchers in a capacity such that they understood what actual prison was like.
But how much involvement did the researchers have in making this as messed up as it was, other than just running the experiment at all?
I mean, they interacted as much as a warden does. So it's not like they were down next to the cells or really monitoring the guards much more in any more than they...
They weren't encouraging this behavior.
No, they weren't. No. I mean, not at the start, no. Supposedly, if you're to read what they've said, they didn't really do that.
Okay. Although they would say that.
Of course they would.
We had no part in this.
As I said, the guards became more cohesive as a unit after the rebellion. And the rebellion was brought on by mostly prisoner number 5401.
Tell us about him.
I'm going to tell you about him. He was trying to bring down the experiment from the inside because he was a bit of a radical. So he thought that the experiment going in, he thought it was kind of a way to control students. That's what they were studying. And he was trying to write letters and send them out to Berkeley's underground newspapers, the Barb and the Tribe.
How was he trying to get them out?
I think they were allowed to write letters to people. So they were allowed to write letters.
Just like prisoners are in prison.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm. So so he was sending he was trying to send letters like that, and he saw himself as kind of a hero.
Yeah,
but it got to the point where they kind of forgot the experiment of reality, and I'm pretty sure it was prisoner number 5401 that this happened to. He basically just kind of went nuts. He had a mental break.
Sure.
And ended up being the first person to leave.
Was he the guy who was put in solitary?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so after 36 hours, 36 hours, they had to release their first person.
I mean, in all fairness, like, you can't really say that he legitimately believed that he was, that this was an experiment to control students going in. That may well be that he essentially had a bit of a psychotic break whilst put in solitary, which is kind of what solitary is designed to do, mm-hmm. is to break you into this mess of a human and make you malleable, but also just make you not like non-existent, right? And so you unless he went into it going, this is a conspiracy, he probably came up with that inside solitary.
The letters that he wrote, the letters that he was writing beforehand to his girlfriend confirmed that he
went
gone
into
in.
It
he'd gone in thinking that it was, he was a bit of, he had a history as a radical. Oh. So he'd already expected it to be...
But that I mean, that's just poor on the part of the researchers then, that they allowed somebody with this... Because they, like you said, they risk. Did a psychological analysis and they found everyone to be healthy.
Oh, he was healthy. He wasn't a conspiracy theorist.
Well, that's a conspiracy theory.
I mean, he thought it was... I mean, it kind of... He thought that the data could be used to control like
right.
students. Not
okay.
in a not in a way that's awful. In a way that's more... Okay, this is how we control people.
So was he trying to right. throw the experiment from the start?
Though? Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That they should have picked up on that, really.
I mean, they did.
Well, they shouldn't have let him
after
in
after 36
then.
Hours.
Yeah, but he wasn't really right. causing any difference, you know?
Okay, fair enough.
Like, as in...
we'll let the experimenters off having them made this dreadful experiment.
I mean, because they also got into the... This is the issue, that he was talking about this as though he was... actually the superintendent of the prison or the warden of the prison. They forgot that they were just running an experiment. They saw it as their own little prison, supposedly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it got too real too quick. They had lights at 10 p.m. and the guards would sometimes force the prisoners to urinate and defecate into a bucket instead of taking them to the toilet.
Fantastic.
Oh, there was a toilet? I thought there was that from the start.
Yeah, so there was a toilet, but
they
stopped
also letting people out, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then they stopped letting them empty the bucket.
Oh,
lovely.
Which was just lovely, yeah. And then, as I said, after 36 hours, someone had to leave because he was screaming and crying and just going nuts. And it took them a bit because they thought that he was faking it. And they didn't want to let him out if he was just faking it to leave. Which is mental, because if you actually wanted to leave, you could just say, I don't want to do this experiment anymore, I'd like to leave. But no one did that. Over the entire six days, not a single person said candidly.
Because they forgot, I guess.
They've completely forgot.
Wow.
Or it didn't feel like that would work.
Yeah, wow.
There were some concerns, obviously, from parents, as there would be. So they allowed visitation, which was really interesting. So they had to write letters to their parents to ask them to come, or friends and family to allow them, ask them to come to visit them. So they set up like actual visitation. So they had the parents come in and wait for half an hour because they didn't want them to necessarily know the conditions inside of there. And then they had to sign in and, you know, state the reason for their visit. They weren't allowed to stay for more than 10 minutes. To speak to the people. They weren't allowed to touch them or anything. It was,
no hugging.
Yeah, it was genuinely like an actual prison visitation. And the parents got heavily involved in it as well, as in one of the parents wrote a letter or said that their son looked tired and that he wasn't sleeping enough.
Mm.
And the warden said, well, if you write a letter requesting from the superintendent or whatever...
Wow.
And the mother literally
like, there's
wrote
a real system in place.
Like, yeah, they had an actual system. The prisoners even had like a grievance committee, which
what?
Did nothing. But like, if they could submit grievances to like from the committee to the higher ups.
Considering this is a first time experiment, like this is quite a lot of like it's quite complex. It's not just chucking a bunch of people in a room and seeing what happens. Like they actually simulated a prison pretty well.
Oh, they
like,
full on
playing
yeah.
The Sims.
Yeah,
which is it's insane how deep they got into those roles.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
really deep
and
into the roles.
How quickly it all went south.
Yeah, because this all happened, this is what I forget, this happened over 6 days. So I'm reading all of this and I'm like, how did this fit into 6 days?
Yeah.
But then obviously the...
First riot on day two, first person to leave in 36
on day
hours
two,
in.
Yeah, after a day and a half.
Blimey.
Is there anything you can tell us about the guy who started these experiments up? What was he doing? What was he hoping to find out?
Zimbardo.
Who was he? Was he all right?
He was all right, as far as I can tell. Zimbardo, he was just a social psychologist. He wanted to... There's a whole story behind it about the whole prison complex. He wanted to find out why prisons were so bad. He went on to actually like consult in massive cases of mistreatment of...
Wow.
Yeah. Of inmates. He wanted to understand if that was something that would happen to you if you were put in the environment, or if it was something that was an issue with the prison system itself and how they could alleviate that problem.
Yeah, because it's interesting because it sort of suggests that because these are like a healthy, randomized cross-section of America and Canadian males, it kind of suggests that the stuff, like the problems we see, are an emergent property of the prison system as opposed to the actual people. Because we always think of like prison, like we have a certain stereotype of like the kind of person who'd be a prison guard, right? But it seems like that just is in everyone if they're put in that situation.
If they're put under the right conditions.
Given
ridiculous power over people who are the same age as them, so are supposed to be their peers.
Yeah.
And are told to shame them because they've committed a crime.
Humiliate them, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's just so gross. It's so gross.
Yeah, it gets worse.
Oh, good.
So, the guy that left...
Remember, we're on day two.
Of
six.
The guy that left, they had this... I think it's about day three now. It started on Sunday. Monday. So, on Tuesday, there was a rumored breakout. Supposedly after the visitation.
Ah.
So, the idea was that apparently the guy that had left faked it. And he was going to get a bunch of his mates from around the area to storm the prison and let everyone out.
Free everyone.
Now, what happened was the researchers were really freaked out by this. They didn't want that to happen. So they went to the police and asked if they could move all the prisoners to the actual jail cells, which the police only turned down because they didn't have the insurance to cover it.
Wow, great. Whoa. Good police.
Oh.
So instead what they did was they blindfolded them with bags over their head and put them up to the fourth floor on an elevator. Held them there for a bit until, you know, after the breakout was supposed to happen. And downstairs, they had one of the researchers just sitting waiting for the supposed break-in to come. Another one of his peers, who had heard about the experiment, came in to see what was going on. And he saw him sitting there by himself. He's like, what's going on? I thought you had a prison going on. He was like, there's supposed to be a break-in. And he was like, okay, what? Remind me again, what's the independent variable in this experiment? And the guy, the researcher was like, what does it matter what it is? I've got a break-in on my... Like, I've got a breakout on my hands. This could be happening. What are you talking about? Like, leave, sort of thing. And for anyone listening, an independent variable is essentially what you're studying against. It's a control group.
Yeah.
It's the thing that you change to see what happens in an experiment. And the researcher completely forgotten that. Like, he didn't know... He forgot that he was running an experiment.
Yeah. That's mad.
Yeah.
Even the researchers got too into it.
What would you suggest would be the control group, though?
I was thinking about this. so ultimately, it depends what you're studying, realistically.
Well, I suppose what you're studying in this case is like the amount to which people take on the roles they are given in a simulated reality.
With psychology, that's such a complex thing.
Yeah.
That the one thing to change would be quite difficult. So, I mean, it depends what you're looking at. I would say do it with women as well.
Yes.
See how that affected anything. And then also do it where there are rigid rules held in place by the higher ups.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How that affected it.
Stricter.
Or potentially you change, say for example, you could change out everyone so that rather than it being essentially like a closed group of people, it's like every 2 hours, it's a new set of guards and a new set of prisoners. So they don't get stuck in this kind of like actually believing it's real thing.
But then what would you be studying?
Well, the difference between... You'd be studying essentially how much people take on the roles when they start believing the thing is real. So if you constantly changed out the people, they wouldn't be in there long enough that they would believe it's real. I don't know.
Okay, I think
it's a stupid experiment.
What I would do is actually, if you're going on along those lines, what I would do is remove the dehumanization. Like, make sure that everyone can still be an individual. So the guards all wear their uniforms, but then the inmates still get to use their names. They still get to wear their own clothes. They don't have to wear the hat.
Yeah.
Or could you change? You could swap them every
or
day.
Swap them over. Yeah.
Like what? The guards become the prisoners. Although they might just get revenge on each other.
But then they treat each other better or treat each other. I think that the issue with this is that looking for something to change, it's such a complex. There's so
thing.
Many
there's
variables.
No, there's no one variable you can change to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the rumored breakout, as I said, didn't happen. Because of course it didn't happen, because why would there be a breakout? So they put the prisoners back downstairs and kind of realized, like, oh,
did they not count the prisoners and be like, that's the same amount?
No, so the person that they'd let out beforehand, they thought he was coming back.
Oh,
to break everyone else out.
So not so much a breakout, it's a break-in.
A break-in followed by a...
It's a break-in in order to break everyone out.
Yeah. The one they let out, they thought.
Yeah, they thought he was coming back. Yeah. Which is ridiculous, because again, bear in mind, anyone that wanted to leave this study could leave at any time.
Yeah.
They were under no obligation to stay.
I don't want to participate.
And no one told them that they had to stay. Which
weird.
Yeah. So, after this, they had a priest come by.
Sounds like
because
they did it.
Some of the parents had concerns, and they wanted a priest to visit them.
Why a priest?
There are priests in normal prisons, I guess. Just kind of like a chaplain sort of person.
Probably okay. A guy who's visited actual prisons.
Okay. He was.
Yeah,
there you
so
go.
So he really assumed that role. And
so wait, the priest did this as well. The priest was like, right, okay, I'm in this now.
Yeah.
Everyone
involved treated it like it was an actual prison. He was speaking to them like they were actual prisoners, giving them actual advice on how to get out.
They should have got a guy
don't
who
commit crimes.
They should have got a guy who wasn't a real priest and been like, you're a priest now.
Yeah, like, that would have been interesting.
The Lord be with you.
But yeah, like honestly, it's utterly ridiculous. So half of the prisoners, when they introduced themselves to the priest, they didn't use their names, they used their numbers.
Wow. Yeah. After a few days.
Like and they were so broken were still abiding by those rules.
That's creepy.
And they even noted, even the researchers kind of noted that the priest didn't seem to be like an actual priest when he came into the prison. He seemed to be more like a movie version of a priest, like what you would expect him to be.
Why?
I don't know. I guess that's just how he would be in that prison environment.
So they thought all of the fake roles were real and the actual priest was playing a fake priest.
No, but as in he was playing the stereotyped version that you would expect him to be.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I mean,
he visited a prison.
Yeah. So it wasn't a real prison, obviously. But the prisoners that had not been broken down by that point, this kind of completely disturbed them, supposedly.
Mm.
Because it felt so real. The fact that they had a priest come in and speak to them in the way that a priest would, asking them, oh, what are you doing to get out of here?
Yeah.
When I've said it so many times, wow. They could just leave.
Wow.
Everyone could just get up and walk out if they wanted to. So one of the prisoners, again, just went absolutely nuts. He didn't want to see the priest. He wanted to see a doctor because he said he felt sick. And they took him to the priest and the superintendent to figure out what kind of doctor he needed, at which point he broke down crying. Mm-hmm. So they took the chain off him and sent him to a room to rest. And the guards lined up all the prisoners and had them count their numbers. And then they started chanting, shouting out about 819. You know, the guy that was feeling sick.
Yeah.
And he could hear all of this. And apparently he started sobbing, like full on crying. And the guy was, the researcher said to him, okay, you can go now. And he said, no, I can't go because they think I'm a bad inmate. And it's like, he could just go. He was so concerned about what they thought of him as an inmate because he was in prison. He forgot that he could just
walk away
because it wasn't real. You look like you're thinking.
I have no words.
it just gets worse and worse.
It's just so strange. I kind of like...
It's just the delusion of it gets...
What I'm thinking about is like, would I react like this? And also kind of like, I kind of want to try it. I also really don't, but like...
If it gets that real, yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's like, what is the psychology of how this is working? Is it that your brain doesn't have any... Because you haven't got any experience of this, does your brain just write new software for this experience? And then because you're still in the experience, you're only running the software that you've written for that experience? Like, it's just fascinating to me that you think this is real.
I think, you accept the reality that you're in. I mean, they so realistically imitated a prison that you kind of don't really have any option but to
realize... Yeah, it feels to me like they would leave and then they'd be like, oh, the real world.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know when you leave a movie theater?
Yes.
And it's daytime, and you're like, oh, this is weird. I forgot that it was like
that. There's an actual
real
world.
So it's like
that.
It's like you're just in a movie, and our brains are just so incredible adapting to their situation.
But the most immersive movie.
And like, if you're in this scenario, like, remembering what your real life is like isn't helpful to you in this scenario. So you only may as well only run the code of the program that you've run, you've built up to survive in this world that you're in.
Weird. It's weird.
Fascinating.
So I've got a quote from what the Zimbardo said to 819. So this was a point where he's crying.
Do we know his actual name?
I don't have it down here.
Amazing.
But he was crying and they were chanting at him. And he said, listen, you're not number 819. My name is Dr. Zimbardo. I'm a psychologist and this is not a prison. This is just an experiment and those are students just like you. Let's go. And the kid, he stopped crying. I say the kid, this like 18 to 20 year old boy, stopped crying, looked up at him and just said, okay, let's go. Supposedly, like he'd just woken up from a nightmare.
Wow.
Whoa. Like,
I've been there before.
And apparently, so the doctor that wrote this, he said he was convincing himself of that statement as he said it, you know, because he had gotten also into the role of being the superintendent.
This
is so messed up.
Yeah, it's messed up.
These experimenters should not have been part of the experience. They should have been outside of it, observing,
solely
having
observing.
Nothing to do with it.
I mean, they had to, what level of involvement do you have, you know? They were like, I mean, they needed to have, they kind of took on the roles of the superintendent and the warden.
If you need a superintendent, they should have got another student.
The fault they made was when they gave themselves roles of superintendent and whatever the other one was.
They kind of just fell, I think they kind of fell into that more than gave them, because they needed to observe and so as to not break the experiment, break the...
Yeah, but they should have just observed through a camera.
Yeah, but so as to not break the reality. You know?
Yes, through a camera. Prisons have cameras in them.
Yeah, I know, but as in, if they want to speak to the... If they want to psychologically evaluate the prisoners.
Right. Okay. Right, fine.
No, and I think... I mean, I also do agree with you. They shouldn't have been a part of it, but that's their... I think that's the explanation for them being a part of it.
Yeah, but yeah, they just shouldn't have... They shouldn't... Or maybe they should be able to... I don't know. Yeah, I, mean, I don't know.
They
I don't know. They shouldn't have run the experiment. That's
they should have had other volunteers.
But it is fascinating, and it, to a certain extent... I understand why, what we were saying earlier, it is impossible to have a control group in this experiment, to a certain extent. I mean, maybe someone better at the scientific method or better at experiments will be able to write into us at scigyspod@gmail.com and tell us the control group.
What was that, Luke? What was that?
scigyspod@gmail.com, Corey?
Oh, scigyspod@gmail.com.
scigyspod@gmail.com. Yeah, cool. Anyway, so maybe someone will be able to write into us and explain a better control group they could have done, but just because you can't design something around specifically around the way that we do scientific method studies, scientific studies, doesn't mean that this isn't fascinating.
Oh, it's incredible.
And, like, it's entirely immoral and, like, not particularly sound from the perspective of, yeah, controlling for variables, but it also... opens up this whole thing we wouldn't have known existed in psychology if we hadn't run it. And like sometimes these terrifying, awful scientific experiments, like for example the one where they got two twins and they separated them at birth, that's entirely immoral, it does open up fascinating things. And like you get the same thing from like horrible experiments in the war that are now the reason why we have a bunch of the medicine we have. It's like, I'm not saying we should do these things, but when they happen by accident or by evil stuff, some amazing things come out of it, and like that is incredible. But also don't do it.
But if it
happens, we should collect all the data as soon as possible, analyze it, learn from it, and then never do it ever again.
It's like the atomic bomb, you know.
Exactly. Yeah,
learn what you can, but just maybe don't.
Yeah,
I think it is really interesting. I mean, it's not a normal experiment, but it does give you a lot of insight.
And it kind of highlights how potentially the traditional way of doing scientific experiments, which obviously is designed around controlling for variables and also morality, like it doesn't allow for discoveries like this.
Yeah, I mean, this is more of an open experiment than you can really... It's more kind of just see what happens.
Yes.
Without a control. I think it's less of an experiment, more of an observation than an experiment, than anything.
But I suppose it... Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is really interesting. I don't think
it's a traditional scientific experiment in the slightest.
To a certain extent, though, I'm inclined to say it doesn't need a control, because the control is happens in actual prisons.
Mm.
It's almost like this is the control. The variable is... the fact that the prisoners haven't committed crimes and the guards are not guards and don't have any actual authority. And that, yes, the prisoners are able to go. I suppose that's three variables, but it itself is a comparison.
The variable is whether it's reality or not.
Yes.
But ultimately, the thing is, you say it's immoral, but they could leave. No one's forcing them. You know?
Yeah. Exactly.
That's the thing. Like, it's you could say it's as bad as all that, but ultimately,
sure. But you couldn't rerun the experiment because it would be immoral. Because it basically, it's like, okay, they can leave, but they also might get massive PTSD.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, in that sense, yeah. But again,
it was immoral the first time because they didn't know what would happen. If we ever run this experiment again, it is now immoral.
But then also, you could just, before anything really bad, as soon as it started to turn, you could just be like, okay, I'm going to leave now. But it got to the point where they couldn't, which I think is really interesting because it ties into like cycles of abuse.
Yes.
Of, oh, why don't...
About being trapped in a cage of your own mind. It's not a real cage, but it's exactly. As real as if it were a real cage.
The prisoners, the guards, and even the researchers started to believe that they couldn't leave, even though they could.
Yeah, exactly. So it was like, I've been watching The Act recently, which is about, I don't know if you've heard it, about, I think it's, what's her name? It's about Dee Dee Blanchard and Gypsy Rose Blanchard.
I have heard of it. I've not watched it.
So essentially, the story of it is this: this mother has this syndrome wherein she basically fakes her daughter being ill constantly for everything.
Oh yeah.
So they think that this little girl, she can't walk. She has her teeth removed. She's got a feeding tube. All of these things. Like, she pretends that she had leukemia at the age of 3. She moves around and stuff. And then at one point, the daughter is old enough that she tries to walk, and she realizes that she can walk, and then she starts to slowly realize that her mother's been lying to her.
Yeah.
And lying about her age. She said she was 5 years younger than what she was.
Yeah.
So by the time that she was about 18 and the mother said she was 15, she wanted to leave, and she knew it was lies, but she couldn't. It got to the point where she got to the age of 24 and she was still pretending, like,
she has no software. Like, if in her brain, I don't mean like we literally have software, but she has no code.
Mm.
Of how to leave and how to what the world will be.
This
like.
Is what she's learned for the last 24 years. She if was you otherwise break out perfectly. Of that, what do you do?
It sounds similar to this thing called Muschelkin syndrome.
Oh, that is it. Yeah, but it's by proxy.
Yeah, and Muschelkin syndrome being something that I myself believe I had, although I haven't been officially diagnosed. When I read about it, I went, "Oh, this was me for like 5 years, maybe 10 years." Where essentially you want so desperately to be in the role of a sick person that you start faking illnesses, not from the perspective of like wanting like to get anything for yourself, just because I don't know why, but in my case, for example, I have periods in my life in my teenage years where I would just like pretend to everyone that I'd been fainting, or pretend to everyone, like just weird stuff like this.
Really?
And I don't know. I never knew why I was doing it. I never knew it was even a real thing. And it does say, like, anything that somebody with Muschelkin syndrome gets out of it, for example, disability benefits, if they're pretending to be disabled, isn't the motive. It's not the motive. It's not motivated for personal gain. It's motivated by wanting to be in the role of the sick person in order to be cared for. And that was what I read about. I was like, I know exactly how that felt. I wanted to be looked after.
A deep feeling of wanting to be
loved,
cared for.
And just like, I just felt so unsafe and unloved and all this stuff. And I started doing this thing to myself. And by the worst possible scenarios with people with this thing, they will check themselves into hospital, and as soon as they're found out, they'll flee the hospital and just go straight to another hospital and just sail this up, and they'll just keep doing it because they want to be cared for. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it's incredible. Especially when, so it's similar to that, what this mother had, but it was by proxy. So
she had Muschelkin's for her daughter.
And this has happened in a few cases, but I mean, she said this girl had the mind of a 7-year-old when she didn't. So this 24-year-old girl, 24-year-old woman, and this wasn't long ago, this all ended in 2015. This 24-year-old woman was in this role of a 7-year-old, like a mentally like 7-year-old girl. She had no idea what to do. She couldn't leave because, not because her mother was physically imposing, like her mother was...
She was a 7-year-old.
Her mother.
No, but she couldn't leave. Because she was a 7-year-old.
But she wasn't fully mentally a 7-year-old because she'd, behind her mother's back, she'd been like, you know, speaking to people online and stuff, and she had a boyfriend, but she wasn't fully, she was this weird kind of like, she wasn't socialized
properly.
She was
a hybrid of a 7-year-old and a 24-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. So she wasn't.
Which is real.
Mm-hmm.
Which is actually real, which is fake real.
I mean, there was all this human instinct coming that she knew about, but she couldn't do anything about it. And her mum couldn't match her physically. Like, She was much younger, and her mother had diabetes, so she could have left, but then she couldn't.
Yeah,
which made me think of this.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Shall we?
Yeah, carry on.
Should we talk about day? We talk about Thursday. Shall we talk about Thursday?
Is that 4 or 5?
Start on Sunday, Thursday.
Fifth day.
So that was the day that the parole board met. Did I mention there was a parole board? Because they brought on a parole board.
I think I already knew that.
Yeah.
I don't think you mentioned it.
What, for them to go and ask to get free?
Yes.
Yeah, so basically the parents, yes. I think it was after the visitation day, they kind of, the parents were like, well, how can we get them out sort of thing? And so they...
Talked to the parole board.
So there was the parole board. So the inmates could go to the parole board, and the head of the parole board was the ex-con consultant.
And let me guess, all the prisoners were like,
great,
playing the part of prisoners and going, I've changed, let me out. Like, I swear I've changed
they
from
went, yeah,
nothing.
From nothing. They were offered to... So the money that they were being offered, they got told, well, if you were going to leave, what if we took all of the money that we were going to pay you? So you can maybe get parole, but if you do, you don't get any of the money at all. And some of them
what?
Were like, yeah, okay, yeah. As in, the only reason that they were doing this was for the money, and they would get rid of all of that. To leave when in reality
they could get up and leave
and still get paid.
Oh wow!
Oh my god!
And apparently, as I said, the head of the parole board was the ex-con, but he felt disgusted by what he was doing there because it was so real to him because
he was also playing into it then.
But 10 years ago, on the other side, he had the same experience with his parole officer.
Yeah.
Apparently, it was just ridiculously visceral for him. So. And this is what the doctor had said, that at that point they shouldn't have like tried to, you know, barter with the parole board or even like, you know, argue with the parole board. They should have just said, I quit this experiment and no longer choose to be a subject for money, science, or any other reasons. And apparently they couldn't do that. They couldn't say that because reality had just transformed for them. So they were in a prison, a verbal prison, but in a prison that they felt that they couldn't leave.
Mm.
So... Yeah, so I said that the head of the parole board, the ex-con, felt really bad about it because it reminded him of his time. But actually, everyone in the prison ended up hating him because of, you know, his decision to not let them leave, which was all manufactured, by the way. He was never going to let them leave because they could have left anyway.
Yeah.
So, again, this is the fifth day, and the relationship between the prisoners and the guards had already changed. Bear in mind, 5 days ago, prisoners were mucking about, guards didn't really know what they're doing. 4 days before rebellion, on the fifth day, the prisoners weren't really fighting at all. They were just submitting. The guards had a really easy job. And as I said, that's when they started to classify them as good guards, tough but fair guards, and bad guards. The good guards not really doing much. They would be nice to the prisoners. They wouldn't punish them. The tough but fair ones would punish them if they did something wrong, but they were fair in their punishments.
Hmm.
And the bad ones were just plain cruel.
Yeah.
But none of the guards stood in the way of any of the other guards' decisions. Not once did they try and overturn it or argue or anything. The guards were always in solidarity. Jeez. Even the good guards. So the bad guard would torture.
So it would kind of always go to the terrible guard if they were...
Yeah.
Wanted to be loud or...
If they were on shift, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it got to the point where another prisoner was brought in. One of them left, another one came in.
On reserve.
Yeah, so number 416 comes in. And number 416 really stirred things up. Because he was not having... any of it.
He was an outsider. He'd not gone through the past 5 days of psychological torture.
Exactly. So they brought him in, and from the very beginning, he refused to do anything. He refused to eat. So the guards started trying to punish him, but nothing they could do would bother him. They had a rule of only keeping prisoners in solitary for 1 hour, and they broke that and kept him in there for 3 hours.
Of course.
They threatened to not let his cellmates eat. They would punish everyone else for what he did.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And it got to the point where they were told they could either have... So he was being kept in solitary for hours. And the other prisoners were told that they would let him out of solitary, but all of them would have to give up their blankets. And if they didn't give up their blankets, then he'd be left in solitary all night. So they left it down to the prisoners to decide how much he would be punished. Yeah. And the prisoners hated him. They decided to leave him in solitary all night, which is ridiculous. Jeez. Because... he was like trying to bolster them to come behind him and be like, yeah, let's fight, let's rebel. None of them had it in them to do it. They were just broken people.
I'll keep my blanket, thank you.
Yeah. And on Thursday night, there was another visitation where the parents asked for lawyers to get involved, as in to get their sons out of prison.
What?
For lawyers.
No, yeah. What? As in the parents were playing along with it too?
Yeah.
But the parents knew it was an experiment.
Yeah, so the
parents hadn't been subjected to any of this stuff.
No, but they're like, well, they were like,
did the parents legitimately think something was shady, so they wanted to get lawyers involved?
No, they asked for a lawyer to get the sons out of prison.
Oh my god.
So the guy called the lawyer and got him down, and the lawyer,
but was it not lawyers to get the experiment shut down?
No, supposedly.
What? That's what I thought, but no. What? Just to get them out of prison.
What? Why have all these people gone crazy?
So I think what happened here was that they said that some Catholic priest had called to tell them that their son was in the Stanford County Jail and that they should get a lawyer or a public defender if they wanted to bail him out. So
did the parents know it was an experiment?
I don't think at this point they did.
Right. Okay, fine. That's why the simulated arrest was important.
Yeah, so this was... that's the thing. This is ambiguous. So it says that when visitors arrived, some of the parents said that they'd been told by a priest that their son was in a county jail.
Uh-huh.
And they had to get a lawyer or a public defender to come and get him out.
Sure. Okay, so the parents weren't just playing along with it.
Not necessarily.
Okay, fine.
I was about to say.
So he called the lawyer.
And then the president was like, let these men out of jail. He'd also gone crazy.
But he called the lawyer and he asked the lawyer to come down. And the lawyer interviewed a bunch of them. And apparently at that point, he knew that he had to end the experiment. Because it was no longer an experiment. Because people were suffering in the prison. The prisoners were withdrawing, becoming isolated, and honestly becoming pathological. And
wow,
the guards were just being...
Was that when his girlfriend visited?
Sadistic. Like, so the girlfriend visited and was like, you need to end this.
This is just... Because it was the first time she'd been in the whole...
6 days.
Throughout the whole 6 days. It was the first time she came. She was like, what is going on?
Yeah. They had groups meet afterwards of just prisoners and just guards and spoke to them afterwards to see what was going on. And none of the prisoners apparently they didn't like 416, the guy that was
really
trying to rebel for them.
Yeah, the rebellious guy. They didn't like him still. It kind of stuck.
So bizarre.
They kind of stuck with them. Yeah. When you compare that to 5 days beforehand, it's ridiculous.
So you know? Quickly.
Such a change. That was the Stanford Prison Experiment. Ended after 6 days because it was brutal.
Total failure, but we learned a lot, didn't we?
Well, I wouldn't say it was a failure.
I think it's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
And I would say that it's another example of science being awful, but actually it's not really
science.
But
actually, we learned a lot from it.
Because it wasn't done by the scientific method. It wasn't a very well-controlled experiment. It was just one rogue guy in a university who went, let's make something crazy.
Well, it's social psychology, so it's quite... It's a difficult one to study.
That's
not
real science.
I'm not gonna lie, I was worried about this. This is science. Okay, if you look at social psychology on Wikipedia, it says it's a science.
Not real.
No, but interestingly, apparently it wasn't necessarily just from the guards, the cruelty. You know, they didn't come up with it themselves, necessarily. So, supposedly, there are tapes of this. And I say supposedly, I've heard one of them. There are tapes of them kind of telling the nicer guards that they should, you know, keep the prisoners in line. They're not really getting involved with the punishments.
The researchers?
The researchers telling the guards that they should get more involved in the punishments and, you know, you should really be involved. These guys are prisoners, remember?
Intervening for no reason.
So there was an element of the researchers influencing the guards to be more brutal.
Right.
And that's generally because the idea behind this was to kind of change how prisons work, as far as I'm aware. They wanted to see...
They had an outcome they wanted to prove.
Well, it wasn't so much an outcome that they wanted to prove as actual change in the world. So this was more of a thing to affect change in how prisons work in the US.
Yeah, but if you affect change,
you'd have to
by presenting the results of an experiment that you manufactured to get the results you wanted to prove the thing you wanted to prove, it doesn't prove anything.
Yes and no, but also, I mean, it does.
Like, I'm all for changing the prison system, but you have to do it properly.
Yeah, like, but even if you've... So regardless of whether the guards were told to be, like, brutal or not, they still had the same effect on the prisoners.
Right.
So you put anyone in that position, regardless of what kind of person they are, you're not going to make them a better person. You're just going to break them.
Right. Okay.
That was kind of the point.
Okay, fair enough.
It was more about how prisoners are mistreated by guards in prisons.
Yeah, I just don't really think you needed to have an experiment for that. I think that's pretty self-evident.
Yeah, yeah.
that's obvious.
They just wanted to see...
They wanted to show that mistreating prisoners didn't have the intended outcome.
Didn't
have the desired effect.
And also, they wanted to see if people would assume the roles that were given to them.
Right.
How much
they
would...
Well, they'd absolutely fail at that if they were making people assume the roles.
Yes and no. They weren't making them. It was more kind of... it was
okay. But this is like how my dad told me he didn't make me go to cricket. He just lightly encouraged me to go to cricket by saying every day, "You should go to cricket. You should go to cricket. Go to some cricket."
But ultimately, they didn't force the prisoners to believe that they were prisoners. So it did have the intended outcome. Mm. But that's the show. You guys got any questions? You got anything you learned?
I learned a lot. I've got a thing to add, actually, about Zimbardo.
Mm-hmm.
After this all went down, he still carried on with experiments about taking on roles and stuff. And so he spent the majority of his career afterwards studying the concept of heroism in human psychology and what it takes for people to be selfless and take on the role of a hero when someone is in need.
Wow. What were his findings?
That was inspired by his wife basically telling him, "You need to shut this experiment down or I'm going to leave you."
So she was the hero.
Woo! Yeah, in the Stanford Prism Experiment.
It's interesting.
The only woman in the world did something great.
Yay.
I mean, this is an experiment that is essentially, what is it? It's essentially the Lord of the Flies.
Yes.
Oh, sure. Yeah, fully.
It's Dazbus. It's all of that, you know. You put a bunch of boys in a situation where they got to compete. And they will kill each other. They're the worst.
And that's the show.
That's the show. Men Are Evil. Thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? Find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Or send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at Jimkin everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth in most places.
Even though not everywhere.
I don't have Pinterest, for example.
We're done. Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.
Hi there, my name's Andy.
And my name's Anna.
And we are two of the four hosts of the podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. We present every week the most amazing, wonderful, insane, hilarious, bizarre facts you've ever heard.
Facts like, did you know America has a national grocery bag packing competition?
Did you know, Anna, the company Volkswagen sells more sausages than it does cars?
Yes, we've got those two facts and about a billion more in our podcast archives for you to listen to. We chat about them, we laugh about them, we make the occasional terrible pun.
It's great fun. It's called No Such Thing as a Fish. Why don't you listen now?